This is a download from Nature Publishing Group.
Hello and welcome to this special podcast from Nature on the Eppendorf Young Investigator Award. Every year since 1995, Eppendorf has awarded the prize in partnership with Nature to a young European scientist to reward them for their outstanding research in biomedical science. Last year, we celebrated the work of geneticist Ben Lehner from Barcelona's Centre for Genomic Regulation for his research into why mutations in the genome lead to different phenotypes. This year, the panel chose Madeleine Lancaster from the Institute of Molecular Biotechnology of the Austrian Academy of Sciences in Vienna. Madeleine was awarded the prize of €15,000 for her work using pluripotent stem cells to create mini brains in a test tube. She's used these organoids to model the development of a rare neurological disorder. I travelled to Heidelberg to attend the award ceremony held at the city's European Molecular Biology Laboratory Advanced Training Centre. Madeleine and I sat down before the event to talk about her research. Firstly, congratulations on winning the award. How did it feel when you found out?
Of course, it was a big surprise, I have to say, first of all. It's a wonderful opportunity for me to have my work spotlighted, for sure, and definitely a real honor to be chosen this year.
Can you give listeners a little insight into what your research involves?
So I'm essentially working on a new model system that we've developed for studying human brain development in a dish, basically. So we've been able to generate brain tissue from human embryonic stem cells or induced pluripotent stem cells, which then develop into brain tissues that we can then use to model brain development and also neurological disease.
And what's led you into this research?
So I've been interested, I think, for as long as I can remember in the human brain, how it's special and how it develops. And I think we've started to reach a point in neurobiology where we kind of need some kind of model system where we can now look at human-specific processes of brain development. And so that's what got me interested in going in vitro to try to develop some kind of system where we could start to do that.
So you turned pluripotent stem cells, which can turn into various cell types, into mini brains. How did you do that?
Starting with these pluripotent stem cells, we basically just give them a few signals to try to make them become neural first, so the precursor tissue that would eventually give rise to the whole central nervous system. And then we kind of just give them the right environment to allow them to develop on their own, using their own endogenous signals to develop into the different brain regions that they would normally develop into in vivo.
And what did you see as the cells began to grow?
Initially, you end up with just a white clump of cells, and we didn't really know what we were looking at. But what was really striking was when I had one organoid in particular that showed a very nice dark area of pigment. And it was actually a round, circular shape on the tissue, and it looked just like an eye looking back at me. And when I cut it open, I realized that that's exactly what it was. It was actually retinal pigmented epithelium of the developing retina. And that was really striking. And then, of course, once we cut these open and started staining for different regions, not only did we see retina, but we saw, for example, dorsal cerebral cortex, which is basically the most extensive part of the human brain. But we also saw regions like the hippocampus, which is important for learning and memory, the choroid plexus, which gives rise to cerebral spinal fluid. We could even see tissues of the ventral forebrain, another region of the forebrain, and even the midbrain-hindbrain boundary, which is a very important boundary in early brain development.
Now, these regions in the normal brain, there's a lot of interplay between them. Did you notice that in your tissue?
This was probably one of the most striking aspects, actually, of the organoids, is the fact that when you have an organoid that has some of these different regions within the same brain tissue, that these regions can actually interact with each other. So, for example, it's well known that there are neurons produced in the ventral forebrain that migrate into the dorsal forebrain. And when we have organoids that contain both ventral and dorsal regions, that's exactly what we could see. So even over millimeters of distance, these cells automatically know where to go. They know to go from the ventral region to the dorsal region, and they don't require any exogenous factors to do that.
And did these regions contain neurons?
Yeah, so in general, the organoids produce quite a large number of neurons, and particularly we've looked at the neurons of the dorsal cerebral cortex, which are pyramidal neurons, and those neurons seem to be functional. They can fire. We see spontaneous calcium surges. They can put out axons, and they can even perform axon guidance together in a way that looks a lot like axon bundling that you would see in vivo. So they even know where to send their axons with each other without any exogenous factors.
So this mini brain of yours is essentially acting as a developing brain would at the very early stages.
Yeah, it's important, of course, to emphasize it is at the very early stages. We're not modeling events any later than, for example, the first trimester, we think. But it seems to model at least those early stages very accurately. And I think one very important difference, which is that those different brain regions, although they can interact with each other like you would see in vivo, they're not organized in a stereotypic manner. So we don't have any axes. There's no ventral, dorsal, or anterior, posterior axis. So it's essentially like if you took apart an airplane and then you put it back together in kind of a random fashion with one wing on top and an engine at the back and the cockpit in the middle. These different regions are misorganized, so that plane would never fly. Our organoids probably can't think. They're not functional, but we can study each of those brain regions individually.
So this is really special because this is the first 3D model of the brain demonstrated in all its complexity.
Yeah, so essentially the special aspect is that we have these different brain regions within single organoids. And it's important to point out that previously other researchers have used pluripotent stem cells or neural stem cells to generate brain regions, but these have been isolated brain regions, for example, the dorsal cerebral cortex or certain neurons of the cerebellum. But the idea that you could actually generate these regions together within one tissue, that's particularly new. And I think it's also very important because what we find is that when we have these different regions together and they interact, we get much more complex tissues that also develop much further. And if instead you drive them towards particular brain identities, they don't take on that complexity. So it seems like these different regions kind of need to interact with each other.
Now, once you'd created your mini brains, you took it one step further and you used them to look into a particular brain disorder. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so we were then, of course, very interested in seeing whether the organoids could actually be useful to learn something about biology or disease. And so we turned to a disorder called microcephaly, which is where the brain size is much smaller than it should be. And the reason that we chose to look at this disorder is because microcephaly is not very well modeled in rodents typically. And we think that that's probably because there are aspects about brain development that are unique to humans that can't be modeled in rodents. And so maybe those kind of processes are at work in microcephaly, and maybe we can model those kind of things in our organoids. So the real test then was to take cells from a patient and then generate induced pluripotent stem cells and allow them to form organoids and then look at their development and see whether they could recapitulate this disorder.
So what did you notice in these tissues that have been grown from patients with microcephaly?
The first thing we noticed right from the outside was that the tissues were much, much smaller than the controls. And this really fits what we would expect from the patient because the patient had a much smaller brain. But what's really unique is that that aspect couldn't be modeled in mice before. So the fact that we could see that smaller size in the organoids suggests that the organoids could be a good model now to look at this type of disorder. And then when we looked more closely at the tissues, we found that the reason they were smaller was because the neural stem cells were differentiating to give rise to neurons too soon. And this was at the expense of the neural stem cells. And so the patient tissues, and we think also the patient, has essentially fewer neural stem cells, which then eventually gives rise to fewer neurons.
And what avenues will this now open for microcephaly diagnosis?
I think that by having learned this aspect of microcephaly pathogenesis, we can hopefully at least understand a bit more about what's going on in the disorder and in the patients themselves. If we know that there's a defect in survival of the neural stem cells or in their self-renewal, then maybe we can actually promote them to self-renew further. And this could even lead to some kind of treatments for the patient.
And what about other brain disorders? Can your organoids help research into those?
That's an avenue that we're definitely very interested in moving down. So particularly neurodevelopmental disorders, I think we can start to look at. As I mentioned, the organoids are only really model early stages of development. We'd like to improve that and see if they can develop further. And if we can, I think then we can start to look at other types of neurodevelopmental disorders with, for example, morphological defects like, for example, lysencephaly, where the brain is smooth. But also, I think we're interested in more common disorders as well, like autism or schizophrenia, these kind of disorders where it's thought that there's a neurodevelopmental aspect to it. And maybe we can now model that in the organoids.
Madeline Lancaster there. I also caught up with Professor Reinhard Jahn from the Max Planck Institute for Biophysical Chemistry in Göttingen and chairman of the judging panel.
Can you remind people listening to this podcast what exactly the criteria are when you're sifting through the applicants?
Of course, it's the quality of the work which has been done. It has to have basically make an impact in the field. And there's also, for young people, the criterion of scientific independence, or independent thinking at least.
And what was it about Madeline's research using stem cells to create these organoids that really stood out to the panel?
Well, there is a lot of stem cell research being done, and it's a bit of a hot field right now, but it's also a bit of a mainstream field, if you want. And there's a lot of work being done on, let's say, stem cell differentiation, early differentiation into differentiated cells. So that's pretty well established. But what was amazing in this case is that starting from stem cells, a degree of complexity was reached by relatively simple experimental conditions. We have layered structures, and so this has never been done before. And it opens completely new doors for future research on brain development and also on diseases, for instance.
And how do you think the award and the recognition that comes with it will help her in the future?
Well, the award is pretty well known. It's a very well-established and recognized award for a young scientist. So I expect and hope that it will give her a boost to her career and help her in going, you know, taking the next steps, becoming a scientist, setting up her own laboratory and being successful in her own research activities.
And next year, 2015, will mark 20 years since Eppendorf launched the Young Investigator Award. Looking back over those 20 years, what effect do you think the award has had on the young scientist community?
These young people are role models. They give a positive message out there. They say it can be done. If you're doing good work, you can win such an award, you can get recognition, and this recognition is going to help you. So I hope that this is encouraging young scientists to strive for equally qualified work and perhaps for equal recognition.
That was Reinhard Jahn. After the ceremony, I talked to Madeline's supervisor, Jürgen Noblick, from Austria's Institute of Molecular Biotechnology.
How did it feel to see your protégé win the award?
Well, I was incredibly proud. At my stage of a scientific career, actually, it's not longer so much about what you generate yourself, but what kind of traces you leave. And you leave those traces in two ways. One is you make some discoveries, but then you also educate people. And I think actually education and training and managing to have young people who then move on is a very, very important and essential aspect of science, and so I'm very proud today.
Now tell me about your work with Madeline during this project.
Well, Madeline is not the typical postdoc. She came with her own ideas. This whole system that she developed was essentially developed quite independently. But on the other hand, there is kind of like a fruitful collaboration within a lab. Intellectually, we have exchanged a lot of ideas, but the experimental implementation of all of this, it's entirely her idea. So she really works very, very independently.
How important do you think it is for young scientists like Madeline to be recognized for their hard work?
Yeah, so one thing that I mentioned tonight to some of my colleagues is that if we were artists, we would celebrate ourselves a lot more. I always envy actors for the length of the applause that they get. As scientists, we're extremely critical. We're also very sparse with praise. And that's why I think it's extremely important to step back and actually look at what we have achieved. And the ceremony tonight clearly was something that Madeleine will remember and that will reward her for what she has done.
And what do you hope to see from Madeline in years to come?
If I would have to make a bet on the one young scientist who is going to be really successful in the future, I would bet a lot of money on her. And I'm convinced that she will have a very outstanding scientific career.
That was Jürgen Noblick. That's all from this special podcast from Nature. Tune in next year when we'll be celebrating 20 years of the Eppendorf Young Investigator Award. Until then, I'm Thea Cunningham. Thanks for listening.
The Eppendorf Award for Young European Investigators is presented to young scientists for outstanding achievements in the field of biomedical research. For more information, please go to eppendorf.com/award.